You're about to listen to Dinner with Bands, a joint production between KCSU and the Music District in Fort Collins, Colorado. This is an artist collaborative that features musicians as they share a meal and discuss how pertinent issues in today's society affect their careers. Today's episode was hosted by me, Cheyenne Duba, and features Kenzie Culver, Adrian Ray Ash of Plasma Canvas, and Tara Scholes of Rat Doctor, as we discuss the Me Too movement and how it pertains to the music industry, both on a personal and worldwide level.
We're done with this, and we're going to elevate the voices that are speaking out. We're going to elevate the victims or survivors or what have you, and put a megaphone in front of their face.
Thank you, ladies, for all being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's have you all introduce yourselves to our listeners.
All right. Well, hi, everyone. My name is Kenzie Culver, formerly the front woman of the Violet Tides, and now just me. So, hey, what's up?
Oh, sorry, I was drinking water. Hi, my name's Adrian Ray Ash. I play guitar and sing in a rock and roll band called Plasma Canvas, and it's a pleasure to be here today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for being here.
My name's Tara Scholes. I am the lead singer of Rat Doctor. We have a lot of fun. Yeah, and just continuously finding ways to get involved in the local music scene here. So you can usually find me at the Downtown Artery if you can't find me anywhere else.
Tara, you recently wrote the cover article for Salt Magazine's January issue titled, This Is Not a Witch Hunt. In this article, you said, it becomes problematic when those accused of sexual harassment are pardoned. Phrases such as, they exist in a witch hunt atmosphere, grant abusers the role of the victim. In turn, in an attempt to water down injustice, allegations from survivors are made out to be a systemic ploy to purify a targeted group of oppressed sexual harassers. Did someone say oxymoronic? So, can you give us some insight to the metaphor of the witch hunt?
Sure. When Anthony Cross, the founder of Salt Magazine, came to me, you know, with this cover story idea, it's something that I feel really passionately about, not just from personal experience, but being a woman in an industry that is so heavily kind of not just whitewashed, but misogynistic, you know, historically. I was excited and terrified at the same time to be writing such a sort of relevant but also kind of controversial story over sexual harassment and kind of what that looks like. So, you know, just in doing my research and talking to people, this idea of like a witch hunt atmosphere, which was used in kind of pardoning Harvey Weinstein and Woody Allen's sort of involvement in this culture, the people defending him had described it as a witch hunt. So I decided to go and kind of research what that means and what a witch hunt actually is at its core. And that dates back to the Salem witch trials when dozens of women and men that were protecting these women were hung, you know, under accusations of practicing witchcraft in Salem back in that time. There was a huge outbreak of like sickness that was kind of equated to like this, you know, witchcraft causing people to like be delirious and throw up, you know, and pairing that like physical sort of outbreak with also this witchcraft that was being practiced, and therefore men, especially like in positions of like religious power, kind of took it upon themselves to purify the town by hanging these women, mostly burning them at the stake. So yeah, that's why I think it's a really problematic phrase to use, because, you know, this historically oppressed group of women who are kind of going against the grain were murdered, for lack of a better term, by these powerful, rich white men. And using that term to give a free pass to these men who have been accused of, you know, harassing and assaulting women, abusing women, it's completely problematic because it is an oxymoron. It is using a historically oppressed group of people and then saying that they have now become the oppressor in a situation that just can't.
Something that really bothered me with some of the movement was, like, you know, a lot of people were like, you shouldn't be able to call out sexual assault allegations after a certain amount of years, but it's hard to come out like that alone. It's hard to, like, even recognize that it happened. You know, I have plenty of people in my life that, you know, had something, you know, maybe not as severe as what may have happened to some of the women in the, like, Harvey Weinstein case and such like that. You know, even the smallest thing was terrifying for them to talk about, because they just wanted to put it out of their mind and be like, no, like, that didn't happen to me. Like, you know, like, they didn't want that to happen to them. And they wanted to kind of, like, push it out of their memory. And I think that I think that it's super difficult for women to come out on their own, or even like men that have been sexually assaulted mm-hmm. like this, for people to come out on their own like this, especially like when, like what you said, people are claiming it's a witch hunt against the oppressors, when in reality, it's not a witch hunt, it's a call for justice.
It's interesting that Kinsey mentions, you know, men being sexually harassed too, and them having a voice. And I think that something that I've seen is that as much as this, you know, historically is an issue among women and people of color and trans people, like these are the historically oppressed groups of people, but sexual assault is not limited to one of those groups. And I think with the Me Too movement, we saw this huge wave of just like vulnerability where anybody that had been affected by it was able to come forward. Now, yes, overwhelmingly, most of those people were women. Even more so, you start to see the minorities and marginalized communities that exist within that, people of color, trans people, people of the LGBTQ community. And I think the more that we sort of try to make it a divisive thing and saying, like, we've been, you know, more abused or whatever, instead of coming around and saying something as simple as Me Too, which is a mm-hmm. resurgence of a movement that happened, you know, years and years ago. But now we have social media to kind of act as this platform to, like, show how overarching the issue is. And I think it was a wake-up call to a lot of people to be like, wow, I got online today and the first 100 posts had to do with this problem. And that's why women haven't spoken up, because there hasn't been a platform, there haven't been people listening to them. And now, instead of people just being like, oh, well, it sucks that that happened, but like nothing's going to change, now we're like, no, enough is enough, right? Time's up, Me Too. We're ready to say we're done with this, and we're going to elevate the voices that are speaking out. We're going to elevate the victims or survivors or what have you, and put a megaphone in front of their face, because it's time to like end the normalization of this very pervasive issue.
Do you have anything to add, Adrian?
Mic drop,
yes. And with that, we are going to take a quick break. Stay tuned to hear these local artists' reaction to one of the most popular songs of 2017, Ed Sheeran's Shape of You. Now, here's Rat Doctor's latest single, Watch and Learn, only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
Deadpan beat, head in the clouds, but you're stuck to the street. delicate feet, eyes on the ground as the pattern repeats.
Welcome back to Dinner with Bands. After listening to Ed Sheeran's Shape of You, my reaction was...
It's like undeniably a banger.
But these artists had some different opinions.
We were all bopping our heads to that. But the thing is...
No, I was shaking actually, my
head.
I
you were shaking your head?
No, I was getting ready to say, like, you know, you called this event Dinner with Bands, but, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to eat after that. Like,
I love that song. I mean, like, it's just... It makes my head bop. But the thing is, that song is literally just about a woman's body, you know?
Yeah, it's gross.
And, yeah, when you take the whole Me Too movement into account, Kesha actually performed her single Praying, which was one of the other nominees. Like, the four other nominees up against Ed Sheeran were all woman. Do you believe that the misogyny that exists within the music industry contributed to the decision of him winning that Grammy over Kesha and all those other women?
I was watching the Grammys. My mom and I, we watch the Grammys every year because it's like a tradition for us. And I was remember watching and I remember seeing him win out over those women. And I swear, when I was watching, you know, we like to bet on who we think is going to win. And both my mom and I were hands down, we're like, no way. Like, it's got to be either Kesha with Praying or A Million Reasons and Lady Gaga. Like, those were our two, like, top. And we had no idea that Shape of You was going to come out and win like that. And I think that... To answer your question about that, when I was looking this up, I was looking up how the Grammy winners are, how they're chosen, mm-hmm. and the same way like with the nominees, and it was really vague, and so I don't know how to put necessarily like a opinion on it, because the Grammy website said that it was like 350 people that are like selected to vote for the songs. I guess I would say that yes, the misogyny in the music industry and just in our everyday society does contribute if that committee weren't split equally between, you know, male and female or just like kind of randomly chosen.
Oh, they're very specifically chosen people. So kind of how that whole situation works, I don't think it can be boiled down to like who's on the committee. You know, is it a bunch of rich white men? Probably. Honestly, it probably is. That's overwhelmingly what the music industry is comprised of, is white men, men in general. But it ends up, you know, being this filtering process, which I understand. I think the bigger issue is the general public, because they're basing it on views, how many views a song has, how many airplays it's had, you know, the general popularity of the song. So if that's going into consideration, then we have to look at the bigger picture and look at the listeners. And the listeners aren't just white men. You know, the listeners are the public, the people that are listening to the radio, who are listening to Spotify, who are downloading the music on iTunes. And if this is a song that, you know, has gained enough popularity, and yes, not to discredit the kind of production behind it. Their production value is amazing. They had a superstar team producing this song. But I think it says a lot more about the climate of our entire society rather than just a group of people voting for it, because they do take into consideration how it's been received. Mm-hmm. So if more people are into and supporting and listening to a song like Shape of You, which is about a guy getting drunk in a bar and liking the way a woman's body is shaped, versus someone like Kesha, who's writing this song about Dr. Luke, who, you know, her allegations were that he had been abusing and harassing her for years and mm-hmm. years, stole her creative intelligence and pretty much made her a sellout. And now she finally is like, no, enough is enough. Performed it at the Grammys. It was one of the most moving performances I've seen in a long time. And it's being received in a different way. Shape of You doesn't make people question what they know, whereas something like Praying is, it's meant to be felt, it's meant to be processed, and like it's meant to be an outcry and a way to change things. So I don't think that society, as much as we're making progress, is really ready to like award somebody a Grammy for best song of the year for something that really makes you kind of think about who you are as a person and contributing to that culture.
But that being said, should the Grammys be part of social movements like Me Too? Should the message behind the music be taken into account when making the decisions for these awards, or should it just be strictly based on whatever the judges deem to be musical quality per se or production quality?
Okay, well, there's so much to reply to in that. You know, like that you had a lot of great points. I don't really like to put a whole lot of stock in, you know, awards for music, because it's like if you made something and you're proud of it and you love it and your friends love it and like it, you know, it's good enough for you, then who cares about an award? But at the same time, awards like the Grammys are about representation. And whenever you have that opportunity to be the tastemaker of sorts, you know, like whenever you have the opportunity to set the standard of like what makes a great album, or, you know, what makes a beautiful performance, or like what makes a memorable single, I think it's important to consider societal aspects like that. And I think it's important to consider what's going on around you. I mean, the timing of Ed Sheeran writing a song about like a woman's body and then having it beat out four really powerful female performances. It's just like the timing of that is ridiculous.
Like, and the nature of all those songs, Million Reasons, obviously Praying, are all kind of about these like trials and tribulations and sort of like gaining a sense of worth and purpose after like experiencing those things. So I guess in my mind, just to answer your question about using something like the Grammys as a platform to join a giant social movement, absolutely. If I could cuss, heck yes. I just think if we can't use something like the Grammys to get behind a movement that is long overdue and is so important, how are we going to make social change? Like, think about how many millions of people tune into the Grammys and how much influence music and pop culture and Hollywood has over our society. So I think that's the best avenue in which to like kind of not necessarily exploit a social issue, but like elevate it. And they did that. Like, I will say kudos to them for having Kesha be, you know, one of the performers of the evening with that song. It was so powerful to have the like superstar lady lineup she had behind her, and I think that they were doing some good. But I just think, like, if nothing else, it sparked a conversation. And, you know, that paired against Kesha's performance and the women that were up in the running, like, it's honestly kind of perfect that that happened, because there's so much backlash that it sparked a conversation that the entire country is having now.
I was going to say, we're talking about it right now because it happened. Yeah, and it's ridiculous that it happened, and like the audacity of the judges like to make that happen, and you know, whatever processes made that come to be. It's so ridiculous, but at the same time, it's like, well, since it happened, while we're all here, while we're all talking about how ridiculous it is, let's have the conversation about why this kind of stuff happens. Why do we have to continue having these conversations? Mm-hmm. Like, why is it a big deal? Why is female-fronted band a genre? Like, why am I, on this panel totally. Right now with three other badass female musicians? Like, why does it have to be a thing?
Yeah.
You know, like, why does that have to be something that I strive for is like, oh, I'm good among the girls now. And then, I don't know, it's just a really, really weird concept.
It's like a qualifier. It's,
yeah.
I had a sound guy tell me once that I would be more successful as a front woman, and I won't name names, but sound guy told me I'd be more successful as a front woman if I wore less clothing on stage.
Ooh. Oh my gosh.
And I held up two middle fingers. That's and I put a jacket on.
That just feels so uncomfortable.
Wow.
Yeah. I had someone like that said, you're really good for a female fronted band. And I was like, what the heck does that mean? For a female fronted band? Like, does that does my gender associate the amount of skill that I hold in my field?
And if I'm not a good band, like, tell me I'm not good. Yeah. Don't tell me I'm good for a woman. Like, if I'm not good, I'm not good. I have room to grow. That's fine. Like, I don't want my skill set to be elevated because I have lady parts or because I identify as a woman or because, you know, I dress, like, scantily or whatever it is. I just want to be good and I want to be well-received whether or not you can see what I look like, you know?
Yeah.
Adrian, your band definitely has a deeper message to be appreciated within your music. So could you tell us a bit about Plasma Canvas?
Well, I mean, we're a two-piece band. I write music about my life, which, you know, tends to just be political by default because I'm a trans person living in public, you know. And so I don't want to say we're a political queer punk band because I don't feel like the word queer defines who we are. But, like, I think the closest genre identifiers that feel good to me are dirty fem rock dirty fem rock or sparkly andro thunder punk. And I really like this because, you know, the guitar sound is kind of big and huge, and, you know, the lyrics and general attitude is very gay, sparkly. And so it's like, I'm queer, super queer, and I'm gonna punch you. Metaphorically, with love and support.
Yes.
And knowledge.
I know you were talking about using your band as a platform to actually get these messages across. You know, just like the Grammys could be a platform for this message. You use your music in that way as well, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. The song that I actually picked to play today is called Paint the Whole City Black. And it's about a combination of things. You know, like, I'm from Washington, Missouri, which is about an hour away from St. Louis. And it was written around the time where, like, a lot of riots were taking place in St. Louis because, like, cops kept committing murder and getting away with it. Mm. And, like, no indictments, you know, like, if there were indictments, people were getting acquitted. And it was just, it was ridiculous. And it was very transparent. And so I wrote a song about it. Just about how disenfranchised people were, fed up with this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's a little bit hard not to swear when I'm talking about this song because it makes me really angry to talk about the subject material because in that song, I name names. You know, I name the names of people who have been taken by violence and, you know, whether that be, like, police violence or, like, anti-trans violence or violence toward yourself because, you know, you can't live with yourself one way or another and, you know, just... The song is about all the people who can't speak with me right now because they're not here too, because the world has taken them in one way or another. And so every time I get some small piece of a platform, I try to take them with me, you know, because the ones who speak the loudest are all dead. That's another Plasma Canvas line. And I feel like people like Lila Alcorn, who beg us to fix society and then step in front of a bus, you know, like, that's a pretty poignant thing to not forget about. I don't, you know, I don't ever want anyone to forget that a girl took her life because her parents were religious people and didn't respect her, didn't accept her, you know. So this is the kind of stuff that I want to eradicate. So I'm using my music as a platform to lift up people who maybe wouldn't have a voice if I didn't specifically go out of my way to give them one.
Let's give you a platform right now. Here's Paint the Whole City Black by Plasma Canvas, only here on 90.5 KCSU, Fort Collins. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dinner with Bands on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins. I would like to give a big thank you to Simply Thai for providing us with delicious Thai food today.
So to a lot of people, it seems as if the Me Too movement isn't as prevalent in the music industry as it has been in Hollywood. Just this morning, there was an article published on USA Today titled, "Jewel Questions Why Me Too Hasn't Hit the Music Industry, Hopes More Women Will Feel Empowered." A quote from this article says, "Experts say the hesitation for female musicians to speak up could be due to several factors. Among these factors, the music industry's history of sordid behavior characterized by the slogan sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the sexualization of females entering the industry, the competitive nature of pop music, and a lack of females in leadership/mentoring positions." So what are your thoughts on this?
I got to reply to the first thing you said, because a lot of the Me Too movement hasn't hit the music world, but a lot of it also has. Like, Brand New, Jessie Lacey. Like, there was the whole thing.
No, really?
You don't know about that.
I did not
that.
Know about that. Oh, my
gosh. Yeah. So I was a Brand New fan for a long time, and I almost got a Brand New tattoo. And then in, I think, October, it came to light that he, like, solicited nudes from a 15-year-old.
Ew.
And, like, manipulated her and stuff and, like, did some really gross stuff. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking to find out. But I kind of deleted my Brand New library at that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then there's also the thing with Alice Glass from Crystal Castles. Mm-hmm. Like, she actually just won her lawsuit against, like, her former bandmate who, like, used her, you know, and, like, committed sexual assault against her and, like, basically just did a whole bunch of abusive, manipulative stuff. And, you know, so she was in a legal battle with him and won. And, you know, so I wouldn't say that it hasn't hit the music world, just not as much. And then also the sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing I think is important to mention, because, like, I totally don't think that that's all too terrible, but at the same time, like, consent is the most important thing. Like, it is okay to, like, be a sexual being because we're humans and, like, that's a part of who we are, you know, and, like, you shouldn't be ashamed to have sexual thoughts or, like, desires or anything like that. But, like, you know, the moment you start breaking someone's consent, that's the problem. Just self-discovery is another whole other thing. It's just, like, don't do things to people without their permission.
Yeah, totally. That should just be common knowledge. I mean, like, yeah. I'd say the sexualization per se of females in, like, music videos, and they use that as sort of an empowering thing, you know? I don't think that should be a bad thing. It is all just about consent. That doesn't mean that the viewer has, or anyone else in the industry, has any sort of, like, obligation to this woman because she presents herself that way in this music video. It should be an empowering thing.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Myself, like, I am 18 years old now. I'm stepping into, like, myself as a woman, and I, like, have recently been wanting to, like, write more. I wouldn't call them sexy songs, but I want to write more about, like, my physical experience and attraction to people. And unfortunately, I, you know, see the exact same thing, is that, like, because I write about that, now people feel entitled to, not to me, I've never experienced that personally, but people feel entitled to talk about that as, like, ooh, it's taboo, or, like, ooh, OMG, especially because, you know, I live in Loveland, but I, you know, travel between Loveland and Fort Collins all the time, but, you know, at my high school where I still attend, you know, people can hear those songs because I release them publicly, and then all of a sudden it's, like, a rumor, and it's, like, OMG, like, they did this and they did that. And it's unfortunate that people find that they're entitled to share about that, like, you know, outside of my song. You know, I chose to speak about that. And, you know, the same thing goes for, you know, Tara, you mentioned this before we listened to that awesome song from Adrian.
thank you.
You're welcome. But about how, like, people kind of look at female-fronted bands, and Adrian, you also said this too, like, as a genre, and people look at it as, like, a, you said it in a great way, a qualifier, like a qualifier for a band. And I have found that in my own music. You know, I speak a lot about, you know, some topics. I struggle from, you know, social anxiety despite my love for performing. And I speak about that a lot in some of my songs. And they mean so much to me. And I've found, you know, when I perform them, a lot of, like, younger people, like, you know, below 30 is what I consider young, but you never know. A lot of those people, like, go and say, oh, yes, this song really spoke to me. But once, like, I pass that age range, especially I see this a lot in, like, men, is that you know, they might go to like my Instagram page or my Facebook page that promotes my music, and instead of listening to my music and then messaging me saying that, oh, they loved my voice or they loved this song, I will get messages saying, you're beautiful, OMG, you're hot. And gross. It's, you know, before, and like Tara, before you even mentioned that before the break, I had no idea that that was something that I could consider this like misogyny that it's already ingrained in our society. But like after speaking about that, I realized that these people that send me those messages aren't listening to my music. They aren't listening to the lyrics and the messages that I have to say, but rather they're looking at me and my body as an object, and they feel the need to comment on it. And it's kind, you know, some people will say that in lieu of a compliment of my music. And so I try to be careful about who I say, you know, who I say, ew, that's gross, or
yeah,
thank you. But just the other day, you know, a 65-year-old man messaged me and said that he found me beautiful. And I was like, that's very strange to me because I only recently turned 18, and that's entirely uncomfortable to like be in that situation, because I want to be polite, because it's hard being a woman in the music industry, because I want to drive that traffic to my page, but also, you know, and I don't want to drive anyone away.
Yeah.
But when it comes to something like that, I don't know how to respond, because I want to be respectful and say thank you, but also I don't think that like that kind of age gap and that like whole thing was just not okay in my head.
So I think you're coming too from like a completely different place, you know, being like newly 18, still being mm-hmm. in high school, kind of like finding what it means to like come into womanhood and kind of know yourself on that like adult side of things, whereas like myself as a person, I'm very sexually liberated. I worked for kind of an alternative modeling company in Kansas City. I did a lot of like nude photo shoots where I was very much in control. I was never uncomfortable. It was artful. It was fun. It was very consensual. And, you know, and I have these different views on like my sexuality and myself as a person, where I don't abandon that when I'm on stage. Mm-hmm. For me, like my sexuality is empowering, and, you know, and I feel as sexy in a three-piece suit with a blazer on as I do in, you know, a bikini. Like, for me, feeling sexy is so much more than, like, showing people my skin. It has to do with the way I feel more than anything else, and then being able to perform for people. And I think the reality of it, outside of the problematic things that exist within consensual behavior and power plays, power displays of men, that sort of thing, you know, like, sexiness is something that becomes very appealing when watching a band play. And like I said, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not wearing a lot of clothes, or, like, sexiness is so much bigger than that. But, like, a lot of the, you know, bands that I love and look up to, even like lady fronted, I know we're trying to get away from that as a genre. You look at like No Doubt and Blondie and Fleetwood Mac and, you know, Jefferson Airplane. Like, these women are so inherently sexy, but it's not for sake of them just like being porn stars on stage. Mm-hmm. So I do think like that it is something where people are going to think you're beautiful. They are going to tell you those things, and it becomes less of a matter of like being able to eliminate that kind of behavior and find a way to make it constructive.
Yeah.
You know, if some creepy old man sends you a message on Facebook, tell him that it's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You know, tell him like, hey, that made me really uncomfortable. You know, if you want to support my music, here's a more constructive way to do that. I think rather than just like shutting down, a lot of times, you know, that attention can be really uncomfortable. And then you now have a position to like use your voice to be like, hey, that's not cool. That made me feel this way. And if they continue being creepy, then you can take action.
Yeah.
Then you can block them. Then you can report them to the powers that be. But you are, as you grow in your career, going to become more and more of an idol to people. And, you know, them thinking that you're beautiful can be so much more than a surface level comment. You just have to keep yourself in check, know your boundaries, know them really well, and know what you are okay with and not okay with, and how you're going to take action, or know the right people to talk to in order to make sure that behavior doesn't get out of hand. But I do think there are problems when it pertains to sexual harassment and the way that the kind of attention that you receive. You also have to be very hyper aware that you are like a performer and you're choosing to be vulnerable in front of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And unless someone genuinely threatens your safety or your comfortability, you're gonna have fans that kind of say these things. So either ignore them or take it as an opportunity to kind of like fix, you know, that interaction.
Well, and I definitely do take it as a compliment, especially because it's much easier to tell, like, when I'm performing, and afterwards people will come up to me and go, so, you know, like, oh my gosh, like, you're so beautiful. Like, I really do take that as a compliment because, you know, it helps, I mean, my self-esteem, of course. Like, I love that, but it was more of the, like, you know, realizing that a lot of, especially older men, see my Facebook page and don't see me as a artist,
sure,
but rather as, like, entertainment for them, and not in a good way. And like, but that's really good advice. And I think that both has and has not fully hit the music industry yet. And I think that if I can be the first to start that is like being scared to, you know, report that, or like not even report it, but scared to speak up, especially in someone.
That's part
like,
of the problem, right?
Yeah, like someone so much older that you feel like you have to have respect to. You know, like I grew up in a family that was very like, you know, respect your, you know, elders, and obviously with caution, like don't just respect everyone that's older than you if they don't deserve your respect. But like, I think if I can be the first to start that movement, you know, not the first, but like to continue pushing that into the music industry, then I'd love to, especially with your advice, Tara, is like be wary and be like aware of how I'm gosh, how did you say it? You said it so much more eloquently.
I say a lot of words right now.
I'm sorry, y'all.
Being aware that as a performer, I am an entertainer, but also, you know, knowing my own boundaries and knowing when something's not okay. And so, like, if I can push that to any musicians that may be listening or people aspiring or even people that aren't musicians or anything in this kind of industry, like, knowing that and something that you do can be put out there like that, but also knowing your boundaries and knowing what you feel is okay or not, I think that's... Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Like, giving people the benefit of the doubt, too. Like, assuming that they're good people that maybe haven't been called out on their behavior before when it comes to something like that. And that's the thing, too. If you don't call out a behavior and it's not corrected, it perpetuates. So for someone like that who genuinely is, like, maybe his intentions are good and he just wants to let you know that he thinks you're beautiful and whatever that is, maybe he's never been called out and been told that that was inappropriate. And I like to give people the benefit of the doubt saying, like, hey, that made me really uncomfortable. This is why. Here are my boundaries. And a lot of the times it's well-received and they're like, whoa, I didn't look at it that way. Now, fragile masculinity, this is problematic. I know there's going to be a bunch of people listening right now that are like, my ego isn't fragile. It is. If you're the one saying that, you're the one with a fragile ego. But that does exist, and you are going to run into people like that where you're not going to get through to them and your boundaries aren't going to matter and they're going to continue exacerbating this entire issue that we're talking about. But I just think that that's where we're at right now as women, as people who identify as women, like this femme community. We're at the point where we're just fed up and people are listening to us. So like, keep using, and to all of you women listening out there, performers or otherwise, like, keep using your voice. For every person that doesn't listen to you, there's a handful of people that will. And this community is getting stronger and like more supportive. So like, don't ever be afraid to like speak up about something that makes you uncomfortable, even if it seems trivial. Because if you can stop it while it's trivial, maybe the big stuff won't happen.
Yeah, definitely.
That's the message that a lot of listeners need to hear. I mean, I think that like myself, I even needed to hear that. I think a lot of people do. Yes, thank you.
That's really important. You said a lot of really important things.
Yeah.
Just wanted to add that.
I'm pretty impassioned. But thank you, Adrian and Kenzie, for being here and being in this community and making amazing music and doing what you're doing. It's really fun to sit and talk with y'all.
Yeah.
Of course. Says the lead singer of like the most badass rock and roll band.
Oh my god, I don't know about that, y'all.
I really love Rat Doctor though. Aww. Rat Doctor makes cool music.
I really love Plasma Camp, and it's cool to have you here, Kenzie, because Adrian and I have played on the same stage before.
Yeah,
seen several of
December 11th.
That was
a good show.
We did a battle of the bands together. It was super fun. So I'm excited to hear your track.
Thanks for sure.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah. We are going to be signing off here pretty soon. I'd like to thank all of you ladies once again for being here on Dinner with Bands.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Of course.
Hey, Jess.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, Jess. Hey, Ryan.
We're going to be signing off with Afraid of Being Saved by Kenzie Culver, only here on 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins.
See what it looks like if you're standing on the outside. I can see you from the inside. Please pay no mind to my warning signs. Excuse the mess, I couldn't clean up. I had my doors locked and my window shut. Watch your step. And where you go, the ceiling sang low in a torn up home. And I can't believe you make your way to me. Cause no one's even seen a bother to
My scars.